Extra Points is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. You must be 21 or older.
Welcome to Extra Points. Now here's your host, Cousin Sal, and his good, good pals, Dave Damashek and Martin Weiss.
All right, welcome to the Extra Points Podcast, part of the Extra Points Podcast Network, also part of Omaha Audio. Yeah, Cousin Sal coming to you on a Tuesday morning, spaghetti and meatballs, fiddling with the knobs, babyface Joel Solomon. Where is he? He's not here, right? Out of town. He'll be back later in the week. Joining me, as always, my dear, dear pals, Dave Damashek, Martin Weiss. So much to talk about. What a game last night. Chiefs, let's start there. Down 17, pulled out 30-29. I had Vegas plus the points. I had some sprinkled on the money line, which was not cool. Guys, every game has, like, I think, two, three controversial moments. This one had somewhere in the upper 40s. Where do we start, Check? Roughing the passer on Chris Jones? That's a good enough place to start, right?
Yeah, that's the story of 2022 NFL season, is that there are these distractions that become the headlines and have made 5 weeks in this NFL season kind of unsatisfying to me. I don't want to distract from that. I do just want to take a moment and send my condolences to you, Sal, and all Metropolitans.
Oh, we'll get to it.
I don't want to live life in the rearview mirror either, but... I mean, I do want to say very quickly, though. I know I'm derailing where you started.
No, why do you say that? Why? Because I brought up the game that's on everyone's mind and you have to. All right, go ahead.
Just want to say, because now we're past it and before the moment moves on and then we're in the same place 51 weeks from now. This is even worse than a one game playoff, what just happened. You have three games at home and now you have to watch after 6 months. 100 wins, you have to sit there through the indignity of losing at home and having your season ended that way. That sucks. Also, what sucks is Chris Jones, before he even touches the passer, taking the ball out of the passer's hand, thereby rendering said or would-be passer not a passer. What are we talking about? Roughing the passer? Who roughed whom? Chris Jones fell down on a football player who didn't have a ball in his hand. What are we even talking about? Roughing the passer? It's not a roughing the passer.
Here's the thing. And Martin, I think you agree with Check, and I agree for the most part. First of all, we knew the bad officiating would catch up to the bad play, right? We've been griping about, what's going on with these offenses? Nobody can get going. These games are boring. We knew the officials would be the story eventually, right? And Martin, this was the week that it happened. As far as the call goes, I think it's close whether he had the ball before, because that's a good point. Did he have the ball before the infraction, if there was one? The ball was probably loose. I don't know. Was it his? I don't even know where to do this, because it doesn't seem like full weight on the quarterback is not going to fly in this league. This was something else.
I just don't like. The idea that full weight of a tackle on any person is somebody's going to break their legs. I was hearing Shannon say this on TV today. People are going to break their legs because they're just going to run over to people, bear hug them, and then essentially just drop to the ground, right? As opposed to trying to actually take somebody down and like in a wrestling style type of move, which is what Chris Jones tried to do. And then it's not called First, the rules are written poorly. Like the idea that a 325-pound man is not going to land on the ground after he dives is just—it's hard. It's not how the world works. Not how gravity works. But then the ball, like the idea that he didn't hit him high, he did hit him low. The ball was loose. Whether or not Chris Jones had possession of the ball or not, the ball was loose. It's like my feelings about instant replay. We should be trying to make the most obvious call, not the correct call. If we're going to sit here and really have to pin down, well, there was with all the machinations, did A, B, C, and D happen? Or did A, B, C, and D not happen? The entire world thought that was a forced fumble. It should be a forced fumble. Nobody in real time saw that and said, oh, that's roughing the passer. Like
we talked about how that's like fat shaming, right? To say, oh, well, he used all his weight on it. It's like, yeah, that's why he's playing that position. That's why as a little boy, he wasn't able to play quarterback, Chris Jones, because he was already 235 pounds when he was in seventh grade. So it's fat shaming. Even Aikman said, I hope we take the dresses off. That's pretty big for a quarterback who took a lot of big hits towards the end of his career. I hope we take the dresses off. Imagine saying that. Pretty good.
Yeah, well, pretty good. Not for Troy Aikman, because he's getting the pushback from from the residents of Mount Pius on that.
Right.
Everybody gets the spirit. I know what year we're living in, and it's inappropriate on some gender-based level. But yes, anyway, I think that what's crazy is that in the history of terrible pro football calls, we don't have to get into Dechinger and beyond, but I mean, just in pro football games, that call on Monday Night Football may be the worst one I've ever seen.
Wow.
Supplanting perhaps the one against Brady on Sunday. I go Polamalu's interception here. You know, moments
you
matter. So
about?
NFC title game, NFC title game, the PI in New Orleans that was.
It's the worst call in NFL history because it wasn't even a call. There was no penalty call in that one. It was the worst call. It was the worst call in NFL history. Hands down.
Bert Emanuel against. Okay. Bert Emanuel against the Rams that changed the rules. Troy Polamalu. The reason that that one stands out to me is because it was an overturn of the correct call. If you remember that one, Polamalu with 5 minutes left intercepts Peyton.
I'm only thinking where I can jump in and say the Dez Bryant catch. That's the only
and the Dez one. Yeah, it's a great one too.
Well, listen, there's some that benefit from replay and then some that don't, and this sucked.
Right.
And I know the Brady one I think was hey, this guy's had a tough week. Let's reward the greatest player that ever suit up. You know, his wife, his old lady served him divorce papers. He's got this maniac, Antonio Brown, and insinuating that he's going to get with the ex-wife. Like, all right, we're going to give him a break. That was an awful call. But yes, in general, these roughing the passers are rough on the eyes, I would say.
Right. And to Marty's point, you know, yes, instant replay immediately corrects that. The official just plainly didn't see what he thought he was looking at. Chris Jones had the ball. It should have been no roughing the passer. Chiefs ball there. That's the problem with replay. And to me, in a way, even though I just said the Chris Jones thing is maybe the worst thing I've ever seen, the more egregious call was the Davante Adams overturn. Because on the field, they call that on 3rd and 2 or whatever it was with the Raiders driving to try to win the game. Davante Adams does drag the toe. He does put that toe back down. They call it on the field a catch. They look at it and they obsess over it a hundredth of a second kind of stuff. He is in control of the ball, but because the super slow-mo shows the ball move, he's still in control of it.
Yeah, the ball comes loose from his right hand. Yeah, to me, if it's not a bobble, he's still in control. And whatever footage I'm seeing this morning shows that, oh, man, you really should, if it's called a catch, it should have remained a catch, right?
And to Marty's point, it was obvious. Yeah. It's obvious he's in control of it because the ball moves doesn't change the fact that he possesses the ball. It's in his one sticky glove the whole time, takes his right hand off for a second to better position it as he's dropping his legs. I mean, that whole game is loco, and then Davante Adams after the game pushing the guy over. 2022 pro football stinks. Something's got to change here.
Look at that. I don't know if you saw the POV of Davante Adams basically shoving the camera guy. I think it's less of a shove. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and he apologized. So, but I feel like he has his head down, and as soon as he lifts up, he sees this guy he doesn't know who in his face and then extends his arms a little, and he's much bigger and has momentum, and the guy goes flying, and now the guy's pressed charges. So I don't know. It's somewhere in between. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. But let's go to, I mean, that's just three controversial moments. Martin, holding on the field goal. See, I wouldn't say like the worst call was the Chris Jones one, but they definitely made up for it between what Sheck said with the Davante Adams catch that they overturned and the holding on the field goal.
See,
which allowed Kelce to score one of his four touchdowns, 25 yards. You'll never see that again. Pass catcher, 25 yards, 4 touchdowns. Yeah, go ahead.
Like the roughing the passer was bad because we all disagree with what the rule is written, right? But it's hard to disagree that Chris Jones did land on him with his body. Now, I just think you should be allowed to do that. I've never in my days that I can remember seen defensive holding called on a missed field goal to extend the drive. I can't
How about this? I'll help you out, Martin. The last time it was called, the same referee or same official 7 years ago.
And see,
defensive holding.
This is the thing. I remember, y'all may remember, I brought this up with Mitchell Schwartz way back when. Every single year it's the same officials. We sit up every year and complain about the officiating, and every single year Jerome Bolger is calling these terrible roughing the passer penalties, and so on and so forth. Like, it's the same guys. Everybody else, when they don't do their job in football, they get fired. Like, you guys just coached a pup of the week last week. He got fired. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what happens. You know, you get benched. You get removed. But, you know, Bill Vinovich is still calling games, even though he somehow missed Nicole Roby Coleman and Tommy Lee Lewis in the worst not called NFL history. He's still out there causing hell on Sundays.
Let me defend them a little bit, because we don't know what's being sent down to these refs. So, you know, with the concussions and everything else, they are saying protect the quarterback at all costs. So, Shaq, even if you could review the Chris Jones, I don't know that they would overturn it, because I don't know what's being sent down. It might be different from the rule we're used to. It might be different from everything we're used to seeing. So, I might give the referees a little bit of a break there, because everything you see that's protecting the quarterback might be an extra edict that's sent down from the NFL lead the office there. So
I mean, if you know, when you super slow mo at full speed, see, I disagree with Marty about that nobody thought that was roughing the passer in real time. He looked like he leveled him, and I'm conditioned now that when you see a collision with involving a QB, like, they might throw a flag there. But when you see it in slow mo, I mean, he literally, I disagree with you, Sal, that it was unclear when he possessed the ball. I mean, literally, before he lays a finger on the actual human being, the ball is in his right arm and he's falling down.
Could that be?
So what's he supposed to do?
It had to be simultaneous. Did he toss him the ball?
He just kind of grabs the ball, and as he's getting it, and then he braces himself with his free hand next to Carr.
No, there's the fact that he lands on him, there's a still of his arms around it, wrapped around him with the ball still. I know he definitely gets it before they hit the turf, but that's the question. Is the infraction before? It's so dumb because it shouldn't be a call anyway. But
ultimately,
I
thought he forced a fumble. Like, in live action, I thought he forced a fumble. And I feel like if you force a fumble, you're supposed to go down on the ground and go get it. Like, that's what we're expecting. Like, everybody's supposed to do that. Teddy Bridgewater didn't do it last year. He got killed for it.
Well, my son's a defensive end on the high school team, and he looked at me and said, that's how you're supposed to tackle a guy, isn't it? I said, yeah, I think that's basically it. I don't know what else to say. But let's all right, so that's officiating messes and beating up camera guys after the game. More controversy. Chiefs go for two, up 7:25 left. All the analytics nerds, Todd Furman and I scream at each other about this. I always want to go up 8. Let the other team get 2 if they're lucky enough to get down and score. But 9 puts it away with 7:25 left. I don't even know if 9 puts it away, Shaq. Did you have a problem with that?
The Chiefs going for 2 there. It's funny that there wasn't much pushback in the broadcast booth. You would think old school Aikman would be all over that one, but it's funny that we've all kind of updated the math.
I don't think it was an update of the math at all. I think they saw Matt Amendola. I mean, he was hitting things left and right, like he was playing golf like me.
No, you're thinking, Matt Wright, who did make a 59-yarder around the misses. Yeah, that's a fair point. I say go up 8 and get the touchdown and the 2. And I kind of now am with John Harbaugh over the last 2 weeks, and now with Josh McDaniels. I think it's stinking thinking. It's residing in some non-reality, some fantasy world that you aren't, if you're the Raiders, gonna need to score again anyway. So I guess it makes sense to go for the 2 in the spot where they did. I thought was actually the wise move, because you know the Chiefs are gonna get 3, right? So the Raiders are gonna have to go down the field and score anyway. So you may as well try and take the lead in that spot.
You're going on to the Raiders one?
I'm moving to that one. The Chiefs one was to me was more like, why aren't they going wild about this? That this is crazy. I'm with you. Yes. Make it 8 in that spot there and force the team to not only score a touchdown, but then convert the 2.
And then the Raiders, well, here's the thing. I like I think in general, we need to calm down about a lot of it. And I know I'm bringing it up, but a lot of these are 53, 47, 52, 48 decisions, right? Like, you can't just go because it didn't work out. You can't be like, aha, that, oh, what a jerk. Like that. People just sit back and wait. It's cancel culture all over the place on Twitter. No, so, of course, this is everyone's reaction. But really, these are close, Martin. Analytics are not. Like, Chiefs maybe shouldn't have gone for two. I would go. But they're also the Chiefs, and I don't trust anyone more than Patrick Mahomes in the history of the game inside the five. So,
I mean, I really believe the Chiefs went for two because Matt Wright, like you said, the last field goal he kicked before that, he grabbed his helmet like in complete disbelief that he couldn't believe how poorly he was kicking. Man, so I really think it had more to do with that. And Kansas City's had kicking issues all year ever since Bucker got hurt. But going for two, McDaniels going for two, he was on my meathead of the week for that.
I like that. I liked it.
Lost
I
in the
really
game.
Did.
And then, I'll but tell to you the what, point of the expectation of it being 50. Go ahead.
Well, go ahead. No, I'm just going to say that was the ideal scenario, them going for two and not making it. If you give Mahomes the ball tied or down one with 3+ minutes left, he's going to get that field goal. I know you're all over the kicker and everything here, but he's not going to dump off 3-yard passes to McKinnon and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's going to be passing all three downs, right? You want Mahomes down up one, running the ball out with these crap running backs, right? That's the only way the Raiders are really going to get it back, and they did. I'm honestly, the Raiders should have spiked it going for two. They needed to be down one in that situation for it to work. I think that was the only way they were getting it back. But still, 52, 40, 50, these are all very, very close, and we second-guess it, and here we are talking about this.
But you said it though, Sal, to me, analytics, and it does address this. It does a deeper dive than just generic offense versus generic defense. Obviously, they're considering Patrick Mahomes versus, you know, Kenny Pickett versus Jimmy G and otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Patrick Mahomes. Do you like him? That's the math that people, I think, get sideways trying to figure out. It's one play from 2.5 yards out, and you have the best player on the field. That makes sense to go for it there. I think the Raiders also probably think the same thing about their guy. Hey, we have Derek Carr and Davante Adams and Josh Jacobs, who they're having a hard time stopping. Yes, we're more likely to make 2.5 yards on one play versus all the, got to win this coin toss, and then we got to stop them. But then we got to, like, all that stuff is less likely to happen than you getting it on one play.
Well, speaking of the having the best player on the field, I think yesterday was Josh Jacobs. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen him. Martin, have you seen him run that hard since Alabama days? Like, he's in a contract year for sure, and you can tell it, which makes me think another blunder. Again, they call the Adams catch right. It doesn't matter. They're in field goal range. But 3rd and 1, you're not giving the guy who's averaging 7.8 a carry the ball at all. Like, he was torching them. He had 154. Mm-hmm. He had 193 total. All they needed was a field goal. Carlson's as good as anybody in the league. Almost as good as Tucker, I would say. I don't know. Man,
it's almost like the Raiders in short yardage. I mean, they threw a bomb to Davante Adams on 4th and 1 when he didn't convert a third down in the first quarter. I mean, they went on a couple big at the end of the game. It's almost like they didn't trust their short yardage unless they were going for two. I don't know.
You got to think the defense is gassed. And, you know, I don't even mind the 2-point conversion when they missed with Josh Jacobs because he was, like I said, 150. He's averaging almost 8 yards a carry. I think he's going to make 3rd or 4th and 1. Now his shoe came off earlier in the drive. But I think
that was the tactical mistake, not going for two. That was the at 3rd and 2, 1.5, whatever, yard and a half or whatever, that you obviously you're going to go for it on 4th down if you don't get it on 3rd, that they didn't give the ball to Jacobs in that spot and instead went to Adams. You know, the other side of the coin is he did catch it. They got into field goal range on that catch, and the officials inexplicably overturned it. On the field catch. No, we're going to the booth. We're going to overturn in that spot. Bizarre. But I'm with you that they should have run Jacobs there.
So what does this mean? The Raiders are 1-4, and I still think they're good. I'm dead to rights with my AFC West pick that they're going to win the division, but I still think they're as good as some 4-1 teams, including my Cowboys and Spaghetti's Giants. I really do. But now they have a bye, and Davante Adams might be suspended a game. So good night to them. But now it does set up for this week, 2-4-1 teams, Chiefs and Bills. You could argue that they could both be undefeated if things turned a different way. Martin, that's a fun one. Great game looking into the
week. Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for it. It's the Chiefs and I mean the Bills rather, in the way that they completely dismantled the Steelers was obviously mm-hmm. completely disappointing to me and my bet. And I don't know, Dave probably gave pick it an A plus for that incredible
that.
Offensive performance. But I just was dead wrong about the Bills. Like I thought that, after Miami, then after Baltimore, I figured this was a prime letdown spot, backup quarterback. And they were just like, we're just going to go ahead and score more than anybody else in the league this week. And Kansas City, mm-hmm. fresh off my proclamation of them being the best team in football, decided to go ahead and, basically, like Dave said, the refs don't overturn that. Daniel Carson is probably knocking the Raiders home with a 2-point win instead of a 1-point loss. I think I'm going to go ahead and just go with the Chiefs off the fact that, champs stay the champs until somebody beats them. But without Tyreek Hill to run the ball down and score a touchdown with 13 seconds left, I don't know, maybe the Chiefs wouldn't be in the AFC Championship game.
Underdog at home. Underdog at home, Shaq. We'll get to our picks later in the week. But that's that and my Cowboys-Eagles sets up as the two best, I think, for week 6.
Oh, well, sure. I mean, these are the – am I crazy? Is that the 4 best teams in football right now?
Yes, you're crazy. It's so crazy. It is weird that like Cooper Rush, Daniel Jones, what other bad quarterbacks were we talking about? Or not, notable could make the playoffs.
Like, I'll say Jalen Hurts isn't bad.
Taysom Hill.
But the whole, Jalen Hurts, a lot of people didn't believe in him until, he started getting it done.
All right. Speaking of getting it done, our prop quiz winner, Patrick McKiernan, 8 right. Good job by you. You get a gold cap. The Pick'em winner, $100 to Rick Catabona. Has he won before? 12 right. Wow. Nice job. Now, Martin's in first place. You lost a little ground, Martin. What were you, 6-8-1 this week?
6-8-1. Wasn't my best.
Hench and Harry are nipping at your heels. They're 9-5-1. I think they're about 3 or 4 games behind you now. Brother Bri went 10-4-1. I was 7-7-1. Check. Oh, boy. 4-10-1. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Bob. Well, because I'm an empath, and it wouldn't be right of me to succeed when my favorite pro football team is doing what it's doing. I'm just trying to toe the line. That's all.
This is like when the husband gains weight while his wife is pregnant.
That's right.
Okay. I see what's going on. Sympathy.
Dude, we got to fire Tomlin. The dude's been overrated for too long, and they got to trade Chase Claypool, and Deontay Johnson's no good, dude. He got to give that money back and this, that, and the other.
All right. Listen, I want to take a break. I want to talk about Martin's Saints and Sheck, your Steelers, and my Cowboys and Matt Rhule. Wow. What a lucky SOB he is. We'll do Martin's Meathead when we return. Let's talk Caesars first. All right, listen, whatever you're betting, teasers, over, under, do it through Caesars because they have all the names. Caesar himself, Cleo, the Mannings, Henrik Lundqvist, and now yours truly. Yes, Against All Odds is now a proud member of the Caesars empire. And your very first bet, it's on Caesars. Up to $1,250. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get it all back as a free bet. That first bet also gives you 1,000 tier credits and 1,000 reward credits, putting you closer to the types of perks only Caesars can offer. So download the app, use promo code CZRFULL, and go full Caesars this season. Oh, you must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ontario, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, and Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Ohio, and Utah, and other states where prohibited. Yes, you have to know when to stop before you start. If you have a gambling problem in Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Virginia, West Virginia, or Pennsylvania, or if you know someone who has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in Maryland, visit Maryland Gambling, mdgamblinghelp.org, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP.
Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY. That's 467-369. Visit CONNEXontario.ca or call 1-866-531-2600 or text CONNEX to 247-247. Tennessee, call or text Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, now I want to put this to rest. When Dak Prescott comes back, if he's healthy, and he will be healthy if he comes back, he's the quarterback. That's it.
Thank you. I'm so glad you had this opinion.
Come on. He is. Now I will say this. He's not turning the ball over, which in today's NFL, and when I say today's NFL, I mean like within the last 4 weeks, is all that really matters. Tom Brady threw for over 5,000 yards. Winston did a couple years ago. Everybody's in the high 4,700s. No, it doesn't matter. Just don't turn it over. Everyone's playing good defense. You stick to that formula. You're going to win. I'll say, right? Like, you know, Trevor Lawrence, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford, all these guys, all these teams maybe would rather have Cooper Rush over the last month. But he had 102 yards passing, Shaq. Come on.
Well, all those teams would rather have is Micah Parsons is what that's sure. The takeaway. And I, you know, the pendulum swings back and forth forever, week to week, month to month, season to season. But this has been a severe swing in the quarterback league that all of a sudden defense rules the day. It's not been a slow swing back in that direction. I mean, for 10 years, it's been a bludgeoning by offense versus defense. And the defenses tend to step up in, from November through the playoffs and resonate more. But I mean, what the hell are we looking at here? This is crazy stuff. Aaron Rodgers can't get it done. Tom Brady is besides the point to whatever the Buccaneers are doing. It goes on and on. It's a recurring theme for us here. But I hear you, and I'm as big a pedigree snob as there is. Obviously, you got to go back to Dak, except, I mean, are you really going to take him out if they're still winning? As soon as he has an L, as soon as you put an L or even a terrible pick in a tight game next to Cooper Rush's name, then you go to Dak. But I don't mean like out of superstition or anything. I just mean out of the like, don't fix what ain't broke. You got to just ride it until it breaks, right?
I don't know.
I hate it, but that's the way it is.
I'll address, Martin, before we get to you, is everyone's comparing this, or a lot of people comparing this to when Dak took over for Romo. But Dak had some monster games that made you think, oh, yeah, this guy, believe me, no one's a bigger fan of Romo than I was. And I was like, oh, boy, this is an issue now because this guy's putting up numbers and he looks the part of a real NFL quarterback that could compete where Cooper Rush has those moments, but he's holding on to the ball when he gets sacked. You know, he's not thrown into coverage. He's not getting balls tipped at the line of scrimmage. That's about the best thing I could say about him. And he'll make some two or three big throws on third down. But still, Martin, this is Dak's team.
It's Dak's. Like, what Cooper Rush is doing is he's checking all the boxes of, you know, he's being an NFL quarterback. So that's great. That's good. That's what you'd like out of your backup quarterback. A guy who can go, not turn the ball over, you know, and get you some wins, right? That's what you expect. But this is about it. right? I said this, the slipper was going to come off. It would have, if the Rams were any better offensively, I think it would have came off this week. Like that, the loss that Dave is pining for the Dallas, like, don't fix what ain't broke. It would have broke this week. If they don't score a defensive touchdown, the final score of this game is supposed to be what? What it was, they had 22 total. So what? 13 to 10. Like, you know, it's right. This game, their offense, Dallas is not winning because of offense. They're winning because they're not missing field goals and they're playing incredible defense, right? The reason why you have a Dak Prescott is because when your defense doesn't show up, or the reason you paid Dak Prescott all that money, I should say, is the day when your defense doesn't show up and your field goal kicker misses one or two, you can go out there and your franchise quarterback can get you a win. That's the whole concept of a franchise quarterback, not the backup that Cooper Rush is. Because if any at any point Cooper Rush was dependent upon to win these games, the whole bottom would come out.
Well, then there's that's no what doubt.
And Sal, go ahead, please.
You know, he's I don't want to say I don't want to take anything away from Cooper Rush, but let's take a little away from him because he's getting a ton of credit when the two big plays of the game, as Martin said, were the defensive touchdown and the Pollard long rush, right? So go ahead, Shaq.
No, the only thing I would say is, and you know, we had Tyler Dunn on -3 on Monday, who made another comp, the Romo to Dak one. I thought that the Keener, a good one as well, was like, this is not Trent Green handing things over to Kurt Warner. This is not the equivalent of that. I'm having my cake and eating it too by saying, you know, I would be very tempted to stick with Cooper Rush because I know it's going to end. This Cinderella story does not go on. It ends before Halloween. You know, but my point is, why would you be incented to throw Dak in there when things keep on rolling along? It keeps adding up these wins. The formula is right. I have no doubt that for them to win a Super Bowl, Dak Prescott has to be your QB. But in the meantime,
so that's your answer right there. For them to win a Super Bowl, Dak's got to be that's why you throw him in. Like, that's it.
Of course, I understand that, you know.
He's disagreeing with himself, Martin.
Yeah, no, I'm saying I'm having it both ways. You ride Cooper Rush until he inevitably falls on his face. And then you say, hey, get in there, superstar QB. Now it's your turn.
And you also just said it was going to fall on his face before Halloween. It's October 11th.
Yes.
So next week.
Right.
Like, when is it supposed to
fall? Listen, if he falls on his face,
which he's going to.
If he throws four touchdown passes against the Eagles in a winning effort, I might rethink this, but I don't know. I don't.
If they go into Philly, you just said it, Sal. If he goes into Philly and leaves with a victory, are you then going to still say we got to go back to Dak now?
Is it a victory like we just saw where he didn't do a ton of that?
3-2. They win it 3-2.
That was the conversation last week. If he goes in and beats the defending Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams, are you really going to say go back to Dak? Yes.
No, I mean, because
at some point you're just saying, all right, like, no, I got to hold on to this rabbit's foot. That's what it is. Like, yeah, but what's it actually doing? It's just sitting there in your in your front seat of the car. You're like, yeah, but I've never been in a car accident. It's like, okay, but it really doesn't have any effect. You know, now I'm really diminishing his skills to just what a rabbit. All right. But you know what I'm saying, right?
A lot
of it's like, yeah, well, he's just happens to be the guy in there. Like, you know, there's a lucky fan at the stadium too, who hasn't lost in 3 years.
Right. The idea that he is better or some equivalent in some reality to Dak Prescott is laughable. I'm just saying, I don't know how you pull the plug when it keeps working out week after week.
Shaq, I'm looking at your win total, Steelers. What do you think? What do you think it is for the year? I love that they keep these up.
There's nothing anybody nationally could say that on the banks of the Three Rivers, even people who resided there at one point, guys like Ryan Clark, haven't already said. I think that most of the reaction has been borderline histrionic from people flailing about, trying to make sense of this. Here's the worst part of it.
But you love Ryan Clark, and Ryan Clark is calling for Tomlin's head.
No, he's not calling for Tomlin's head. He's saying he's challenging him on his decision-making, as I have for 3 weeks as well, that you cannot continue to approach things the way you're approaching things. When you don't have T.J. Watt, you don't have your Micah Parsons / Aaron Donald, what are we doing? This is not the way to play. You can't win games the same way when you don't have the guy who makes those wins happen for you.
I'm with you, but we're fast approaching them being the worst team in the league, and I think maybe you want that as a in terms of draft order and preference.
Well, that's what people are saying.
Four and a half wins is second lowest only to the Texans at 3.5.
Call me Pollyanna if you wish. I guarantee you that they will go over 4.5.
Really? Wow.
They are in the gauntlet. They are a deeply flawed team, but TJ Watt's going to come back. That will, again, as I say all the time, there is a reason that communism does not prevail in pro football. Guys make more money because they're better than other guys who replace them. The TJ Watt will be a major addition to the Steelers. And by the way, once they clear the next three games, which are a misery.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When is he coming back?
They're going to win five or six games in the back half of the schedule. Go through it. I know that that's on some people. We finally need to bottom out. We should tank it. They should not dress TJ. They should just IR that dude for the rest of the year and bring him back when the Steelers are ready to be good again. Like, what the hell are we talking about? Guess what? That's not going to happen.
Check if they're
TJ
1-7.
TJ Watt is going to come back.
If they're 1-7, then they have to go. You have to go 500. You have to go 5-4 the rest of the way. And you still have the Saints, the Colts, the Ravens, the Bengals, the Raiders, the Brown, old Ravens twice. I don't know. That's tough. I don't know if you get there. 4.5 seems fair, Martin.
I just want to know if the Steelers were winning, but TJ Watt was still hurt and waiting to come back. If they would wait for the right time to put TJ Watt back into the lineup, you don't want to mess up the mojo.
Oh, wow.
As you said, it's the reason why pro football is communism, things. Right? Isn't there? There's a reason why. That's
no
crazy
one's more of a pedigree snob than I am. I mean, obviously, it's not like I'm saying like, hey, maybe Cooper Rush can hold on to the gig endlessly. I think he's going to
Just until he loses. But I think
if he stinks in a win, you can replace him. But I think that you have to let the clock strike midnight on this guy, given the way things are rolling and working out for not been 2 weeks. We're now past a month, but we're not talking about the Cowboys.
I think the sad
ending for a lot of the nihilists on the banks of the Three Rivers, they're like, dude, they're going to wind up with Will Anderson and they're going to put him on the other side of TJ Watt in 2023 and we'll be right as rain. Like, that's not going to happen. I'm sorry if that's what you're wishing for. I'm residing in reality. They will tune it up enough that they're going to wind up with.
I'm residing back when you get Kenny Pickett an A+ for three interceptions.
Yeah, Shaq, we need a grade. We need a grade for game two, Kenny Pickett. A-. He gave him an A-. What do you give him for his second week?
Also, most people agreed with me on that, so you're arguing
they
against,
did? Most too. In your house?
Not you two. No. I mean, go dig up the national reviews of him. I mean, like Dan Orlovsky for what he matters. And
all right, what's week two? People. What's week two? I'm just asking you.
I mean, they were quickly in throw every down mode, which is why I told everybody he's going to go over 203.5, which he breezed past because, they were playing a superior team.
Grades are typically letters, Dave.
Come on, let's do it.
Give him a B+.
Okay. B+, so he's got an A- and a B+. Wow, Martin,
I love the scrap, though, that he's not going to take no jive. If a player tries to hit him in his legs, he's not going to wait for his teammate to jump in. He's going to take the fight himself. I loved it.
Martin, maybe Pickett should go back to college with these grades. I mean, he can get into Harvard. Or he can get a much better school than Pitt at this point with the A- and B+ for no touchdowns and four interceptions so far, right? He has no touchdown passes so far, right?
Just touchdown runs, a few of those. But yeah. I mean, the Steelers didn't stand a single shot in that game. But to Tomlin's point, though, he did say, he's like, yo, we got, what did he say? He got handled from the first minute. It's like, you can't really make individual assessments out of that. But you would have liked to see, some points on the board.
All right. Martin, to your team now. Now we get to your team. I was all over the Saints, and I'm all over Taysom Hill. And I know you don't love him, but he's the greatest tight end pickup on the waiver wire ever. I mean, 5 touchdowns for this tight end, on pace for 16. What a year for Taysom Hill, the tight end of the century. Come on, could he be your quarterback, though?
See, that's the issue. That's when you now you went a little too far. You know what I'm saying?
But no, here's the, I never go too far.
This is what's wild. How is it that the Wildcat is working in the NFL right now? Like, yeah. I mean, essentially Taysom Hill is a Wildcat quarterback. Saquon Barkley's actually a running back, right? Who is just like taking Wildcat snaps. The Giants have won two games doing it. Like, it's just, that's my biggest takeaway is the Wildcat is back from 2009, and we'll see how long that it lasts, because that's about how long it takes the Hill stretch.
The defenses are, the defenses are stymieing every other play, every other formation. So something, I guess, has to work.
I mean, and it kind of makes sense, because like Dave was talking about earlier, in the age of the quarterback, well, it's really now we're in the age of two high safeties, right? So now everybody's just playing at those different types of coverages where everybody's just dropping back and making you dink and dunk down the field. Well, if you can run the ball, that's going to benefit it. So I guess in retrospect, I answer my own question, just like Dave did earlier about why Dak will be the starting quarterback very soon in Dallas.
Yeah, you know, but the dink and dunk, and it makes sense. Yes, that's why there's 15 play drives, and that's why it's tougher for these teams to put up six, and we're seeing more threes than sixes. But the dink and dunk quarterbacks are Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, guys who've done this all their lives, and they can't figure. That's what's weird to me. Like the Rodgers game, I mean, it was like 5 yards to 5 yards to Lazard and six to Cobb and four to Tonyan, and they did whatever they wanted with their offense. And then he got sacked on a third down play, kicked him out of field goal range, and that offense was never the same. That's a weird. Not to change topics here, but I don't know why some of the elite quarterbacks can't catch on to these sexier, scheming deviations defensive coordinators are throwing at you.
I think it's really just as simple as the tendency breakers. When you're thinking about those guys, they're throwing the ball more often than not. And like if you hear defensive players talk, they say the hardest thing to do is determine whether or not it's going to be a run or pass on a play action or like one of those RPOs or stuff like that. It's like, I really think it just has something to do with that, because otherwise it's completely inexplicable to me.
Yeah, I don't know either. Shaq, Matt Rhule gets $42 million. He was terrible. He gets $42 million. Now, let me ask you this. Knowing that you could walk away from a contract with $42 million and sit out and just sit home, is there incentive to win in the NFL? If you're one of these good college coaches that comes right out of it, right out of the mix, gets to the NFL. If you're not going to be Belichick, how much incentive is there to win if you know you can walk away with a ton of money?
Well, I mean, I think what you're getting at is a good conspiracy theory that, you know, you don't by accident go out of your way to get Sam Darnold and then replace Sam Darnold with Baker Mayfield, right? I think Matt Rhule knew what he was doing all the way here, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious now. $42 million, he's going to watch games on Saturday and Sunday, and good for him.
Martin, it's a lot of money. I don't know who's next to get fired. I would say Nate Hackett is the favorite, but Matt Rhule
by
week 5.
That's going to be wild if he really does get broomed. I know people keep talking about Nate Hackett, but if he really gets broomed,
it would be insane.
4 weeks, 5 weeks, 8 weeks into his first season. What's the earliest? Has anybody looked that up? I should know that. The earliest a guy's ever gotten fired? I mean, I remember, you know, a guy getting one season, but
I'm almost positive that Urban Meyer was the first coach to be fired in his first season, but you know, he wasn't quite fired in that
during
way.
The year. I feel like someone walked away from it. Didn't someone walk away? Weren't fired, but weren't doing well and walked away. We'll have to look this up.
I believe that Rob Chudzinski was fired after 1 year in Cleveland. I'm pretty sure he had 1 year, but with this, he really.
Well, while we're on the topic, give us your meathead, Martin. Your meathead of the week. You're going to give us what? Three choices? We probably went over all of them already. Sorry.
No, we didn't. I had four. One of which was Josh McDaniels, but since you guys don't agree with that, I have another one.
What?
You have Brandon Staley going for it on fourth down and. Which essentially allowed Cade York, who's already had one game-winning field goal. Shaq, we're only at the quarter pole of the season. He's already had one game-winning field goal, allowed him a perfectly makeable winning attempt for the Browns to win the game. Then you have Zach Taylor going for it. And then not only this is what we were talking about earlier about the 53-47 two-point conversion situations. Zach Taylor went for it in the third quarter on Thursday, instead of taking the points. And it's after running the Philly special and then a shovel pass that went nowhere. So, like, I think built in the 47, you got to have some of the play call into it, right? You should have your very best plays saved for that. If those are your very best plays, then congratulations. You are a nominee for Martin's Meathead. And then Hillary Clinton.
Sunday night, right? Yeah, Sunday. Yeah,
yeah, Sunday night. So I said Thursday. Sorry, Sunday right. night. I deleted the Thursday night game out of my brain. But Hillary Clinton, pantsuit wearing himself, Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, whoever you want to say takes the blame, because Cliff took it in the post game and Kyler, you know, kind of shedded it. But spiking the ball twice in four downs and then running your field goal kicker out there to kick again, that was Matt Amendola, who has missed a million different ones, hooking them left, right, and center. Like, that to me was number one, especially because it's like, it's fourth. I don't understand why the whole, you had to kick the field goal right then and there. You could have just went for it.
All right. And those are the choices. All right, Shaq, why don't you go first? You weigh in. Martin's Meathead.
Well, I feel like Zach Taylor is a little bit like, you know, when you go to a modern art museum and people are like, oh, I could put those slaps of paint on a canvas too and call it art. But it's like, yeah, but Picasso first showed that he had the discipline of actually drawing well. That's Andy Reid. Zach Taylor is just a pretentious throwing paint on a canvas. You have to first show that you can fundamentally call plays in the red zone and get into the end zone successfully before you start doing the jive that you're pulling off there in a huge game for your season. Mm-hmm. I also have to throw in, because I don't like the idea, that fans and the media can actually sway what coaches are doing. And that's pretty clear that that's what happened to John Harbaugh. He got so much pushback for doing the right thing against the Bills 2 weeks ago that then he did the wrong thing and it worked out.
This is what I mean, right and wrong. These are 53-47s here. Which was right and which was wrong. I
think he did the wrong thing against the Bungles and it happened to work out for him. But anyway, yes, because of the result, I'll give it to Zach Taylor, because that ultimately did cost his team the game.
I'm going to give it to Staley. By the way, I'm not even sure with Kyle Murray. Did they say that he thought he had the first down when he slid? Because he jumped up to the line and there was a rumor that it flashed on the screen first down or something in the stadium. I don't even know if that's true.
The beats of it are, Kyler said that in his ear, everybody was saying spike, and he looked up at the scoreboard and it said first and 10.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, similarly to the yellow line, the scoreboard is not official. Officials next to him had third down on the down sticks.
Yeah, listen, I want to go after Kingsbury more than anybody, but I'm going to give it to Staley, even though he won the game. I think this guy's nuts, and I think it works out for him. And he's like, he's the "I told you so" guy, and he's brazen about it. And it's weird. And I likened it to your drunk friend playing blackjack next to you, and the dealer's showing a six. And you're like, okay, we're all staying, right? Everybody, we're staying. And he's drunk, and he hits, and he gets a three. 19 and the dealer busts, and he's like, "I told you, don't tell me not to hit," like, kind of thing. It's like, all right, you won, but these are ridiculous decisions, and the play call was bad too, right? So I think you got to get both right in order to come out smelling like a rose in that situation. I'm going with Staley. I'm not up for his heroics just yet.
I'm sick that my first coach fired. My dark horse, Cliff Kingsbury. I'm convinced if Matt Rhule had just been an inch better and somehow beaten that Carolina, beaten that Cardinals team, the way that they lost that game on Sunday, Cliff Kingsbury would have been the first coach fired, and I would have cashed 15-1.
Well, listen, here's the thing. People, you really can't look to guys. But they re-upped Kingsbury. It's like, well, look, teams are walking away from $40 million, $50 million. And, Gruden's case is different. But so there's really no amount that would guarantee a coach has to stay there if he's not performing. All right, listen, let's take a quick break, and then we'll get into Major League Baseball. Are they still doing this? I thought they stopped after the Mets were eliminated. We'll be right back.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
All right, baseball. Curious to see what you guys think about Buck Showalter going to the mound and having the umpires check Musgrove's. Yeah, I commented that Musgrove's, I mean, they were lit up, those ears. They were glistening, like I said, a 17-year-old's prom dress. But so I don't know what that was. Some say Andrew McCutchen says, yeah, they put red hot on their ears to get super focused. That seems crazy too. The announcers certainly were talking about it enough. And then Buck comes out and is like, you know, let me at least get him out of his groove. Maybe people are like, that's embarrassing, Buck. Some of the Mets own people are saying that they shouldn't have done that. I think it's worth a check to try that. And I'm not sure that he's with the spin rate compared to his like 3,000 regular season pitches. I think it was worth going out there for that to check it.
I guess, you know, gamesmanship versus out and out cheating. I guess that's what if Buck Showalter said, I didn't really think he had anything tacky on his ear. I was just doing it to break his rhythm. Okay. That's within the rights of the skipper to try and change the flow of the game, right? I didn't have a big issue with that. I know a lot of people thought it was cowardly or, you know, I don't know, out of line for him to do that. I think that's, you know, that's to me, this is gonna do that. You're getting dominated.
Go ahead, Martin.
I was about to say, to me, it felt like a coach that was challenging a play just to challenge the play. Like, you know, just like you know, sometimes a football coach will just throw the red flag just out of frustration. Like, it kind of gave me that vibe.
Well, but also, it's icing the kicker, too. I mean, he was dialed in, Musgrove. Maybe he freaks out. Yeah, it goes the other way. Maybe it does work. You're right. You get in his head. Secondly, this is not, you know, this is something they've checked within the year. You got a pitcher tonight going Garrett Cole, who's definitely done the put the sticky stuff on the ball. I don't care what he says. He's like, what was his answer? I'd never even thought about it, or I can't comment. I forgot what his no comment was. But, you know, this has happened within the last year. This is not like Gaylord Perry back in the 70s. So they can investigate this stuff. There's cheating going on. But anyway, doesn't help my Mets. Braves, Phillies going right now. Phillies, see, now this is going to look like my picks are up there. We made a graphic for it. I like the Phillies +174 over the Braves in the series. I like Suarez, made 5 starts against the Braves this season, 3.21 ERA across 28 innings. Shaq, you have Braves or Phillies for the series?
I'll go with the Braves, just going to ride the mini era of Atlanta here and try and stick with that. It does feel like baseball is one of those Major League Baseball is one of those sports where when you get into the groove of October and you succeed there, that you build on that from last year. It doesn't mean they're going to win the World Series, but I do buy the mindset, and the guys who they put out under the hump right now have a different level of know-how versus the Phillies guys that they're going up against.
I love the groove of Atlanta. You're talking about the Falcons 5-0 against the spread. I'm with you there. I'd rather root for them. Go ahead, Martin. What do you think for this series?
I'm going to go with the Braves, but you just stuck me with that. That reminded me, Atlanta 5-0 against the spread. If Grady Jarrett doesn't get caught in a roughing the passer, my pup is definitely hitting. That's a guarantee. Atlanta was dropping the ball. There's no way they don't score another touchdown. The Bucs hadn't even sniffed the end zone since the second quarter. But I'm going with the Braves because I like the way they build their team. I like the way they've locked up all their young guys. Like that it gives me a sense of more of a team. And like Dave said, many eras and continuing on in October. I like that. So I'm going with Atlanta.
They were 11-8 against the Phillies this year. That's the thing. A lot of these matchups, they've seen these teams 19 times. We'll go to Dodgers, the other National League series. Dodgers, hefty minus 225 over the Padres, plus 190. I'll go Dodgers here. I think I have them in four. The Padres pitching matchups are all screwed up now because they did have to play that Sunday game. Bob Melvin starting Sean Manea tonight. Then you got Kershaw, who's hit or miss in the playoffs, but finished the regular season with a one-hitter against the Rockies. I think he stays on pace. Urias tonight had six shutout innings against the Padres a couple weeks ago. I am going Dodgers, who are 14-5 against the Padres. Sheck, what do you like?
I mean, listen, the Patriots are in last place. The Steelers are in last place. Mike McCarthy is a good coach. Tennessee beats Florida. The world's upside down right now. I got to go with the Dodgers, though. I mean, they've dominated the Padres head-to-head here. This insanity must end somewhere. The best team in baseball, and I'm not just talking about 2022. This Dodgers run that they're in now over the last several years is remarkable stuff. I think they should be able to handle their little brother from San Diego.
Yeah, you talked about like the layoffs. It doesn't seem to matter for a team like the Dodgers. They've been in the NLCS in five of the last six postseasons. Martin, who do you like this series?
I've cashed Dodgers 1.5 way too many times this baseball season to not go ahead and pick the Dodgers here.
There you go. All right. Astros, Mariners, minus 240 for the Astros. Mariners 2-1. Fun. I mean, I was on the losing end of that Blue Jays game that they were up 8-1. That was my bet ache. That's going to be tough to beat. I am taking the Astros here in four at plus 260. Valdez had a streak of 25 starts of at least six innings for most of the season before they started taking him out. Verlander is the game one starter tonight, 5-1, 234 against the Mariners this season. 5-1, 40 against the – what is that? That's crazy. 41 innings against the Mariners. I'm going the Astros to advance. Sheck.
Yeah, those devil may care teams, we shouldn't even be here, are scary. You know, they're the opposite of the curse of supposed to teams. The Astros are cursed by being the team that's supposed to hammer their foe in this series. I do think Justin Verlander, though, makes it all right for the Astros. He silences any of that stuff. I think he's impervious to the curse of supposed to. I think he shuts down the Mariners, sets the tone for the series. And I'm with you. I think they handle this fun team from Seattle.
Martin, Houston 12-7 against Seattle. What do you like?
Did you guys see the video of those guys in the Toyota, in the Seattle Toyota, where they were celebrating the wild card win?
No.
You guys got to see it. It's on Twitter. It's like, so they're all like, it's and it completely silent because they're all at work, I guess. But these guys, like, everybody kind of runs out their cubicle and jumps around. And yeah, I think that's going to be ultimately the best moment for the Seattle Mariners this postseason. Yeah. Yeah, I go with the Astros. And the first Astros professional athlete I ever interviewed, Justin Verlander.
Is that right? Well, there you go. All right.
We'll Detroit was a hell of a time.
Guardians, plus 180 over the Yankees. Of course, this is a spite pick. But Cleveland, I do think they match up in a weird way against the Yankees, going to create some trouble. They strike out less than anyone else in the regular season, 18.2%. Small ball, that's what wins in the playoffs in October. We saw them a boring game against the Rays Saturday. You might be in for that. I think the money's too rich here, plus 180. I'm taking Cleveland. Sheck.
Yeah, I like that. And there is no science to this other than that the favorites can't win every series, right? Mm-hmm. And also, I have to refer back to what I just said 45 seconds ago about the curse of supposed to. I think Verlander is impervious to it. Gerrit Cole, this is a complicated relationship, I feel like, ever since he put on the pinstripes. He's great, but I feel like, listen, Eddie Spaghetti can address this directly if he wishes to. I feel like there is a healthy skepticism of what Cole does in high leverage situations. It's not like he consistently shows up and dominates in spots where he should. I'll take that. I'll take the G's, the guardians of traffic.
What, Eddie, are we just doing this to get a reaction out of you, or do you think the Guardians have a shot?
You guys are, because you can't give any New York team credit. I mean, you guys are ridiculous. The Yankees swept the Guardians. The Yankees have the second most potent offense, only behind the Dodgers. It's a home series. They moved some of their starters to the bullpen. By the way, their bullpen, which has been a bright spot, has like an ERA of like barely over one the last few weeks of the regular season. The Guardians' offense is putrid. Like, they have a couple nice pitchers, but the Yankees are going to score. Like, it's just, it's not going to be. I'm very confident in this series.
All right. Hey, give me Yanks Dodgers. 12-11 games for seven game, 12-11 every final score. I love it. That'd be fun. I'm all for it.
Did they sweep them, or was it 5 out of 6? I think they won 5 out of 6.
They had three. They swept them early in the season. They won 3 straight games. And then, like, so like, they've handled them pretty well. I'm not really worried about this.
All right. There you go. Let's do our play of the day. I'm sticking with that Dodger game. Freddie Freeman. This is why the Dodgers are going to go far, because they don't have to play against Freddie Freeman. I mean, he was really like the only thing getting in their way last year. Over 1.5 total bases gets you +108. Last 85 at playoff at-bats, .329, 7 home runs, 17 RBIs, 15 runs. He had .343 versus San Diego this year. I'm going over 1.5 total bases, +108. Martin, what do you like?
I'm going with Justin Verlander, my boy, from way back when. I'm going to go over 17.5 total outs recorded. I do think he gets the win tonight, too.
Oh, I love those. I love those bets. Yep.
Oh, the outs. Yeah, I think he.
So that's
I think
six innings. Yep.
Yeah, he comes out tonight and establishes like, all right, Houston, this is what we're going to do here. He goes deep. I think he gets the win. That's at Caesars at +120. And says, like, don't worry, bullpen. I got this one. I'm going crazy. I like every Justin Verlander, over strikeouts, under hits, but officially over 17.5 outs recorded.
Wait a minute. What? So, really? That's 6 innings. They don't expect him to go 6 innings? I know they do. They have a whole thing with lefty-right. They do a great. The Astros are as good as anyone with those 6 through 9 innings, but they don't think he'll go 6? That's a good bet, I think.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know. It might be a misprint. Shaq, what do you like?
Well, I like the Dodgers, and I like over 7.5. So I've gone back and forth with a parlay of the Dodgers on the money line plus a total over 7.5. Like I say, that pays out at +170. I could be swayed, though, to switching that to over 7.5 and the Dodgers laying a run and a half. If the juice is better there, you might want to think in that direction. I do think, I mean, Mike Clevinger is going to be the guy who's going to shut down that Dodgers lineup. The answer is no to that. And for what it matters, Urias has had his great moments in October, but he's been touched up himself, too, and the Padres can swing the bat. So, yes, if you only want to make one wager, I say go over the 7.5. But
all right.
Instead of just survive and live, I say parlay it.
There you go. Spaghetti, hockey tonight. Well, it's actually started this weekend. I watched one of the two games, right? It was in Prague. Nashville played. It's fun matchups there. Let's give our Stanley Cup. Spaghetti, how are you going to get engaged between now and December 31st? There's too much going on.
Oh, yeah. I'm not. Unless I find a ring on the street. That's not happening. Look, she has to know. Look, meaningful Giants football, Yankees playoffs, Rangers puck drop, and a cup potential cup season. That's too much going on. I got to be locked into the TV. No time for engagement.
Oh man, you're gonna be locked into looking for another apartment. I think
if the Giants have, when's the last time the Giants started out 4-1? At this rate,
By the way, I do say good things about the Giants. I think they are 4-1 is a correct record for them right now.
I think out of the three teams I'm talking about, with a loss. The Giants are clearly the worst team out of the Rangers, Yankees, Giants that are in the conversation. The Giants are by far the worst of the bunch.
Wow. All right. You better hope so. But anyway, hockey, the Avalanche are +450 to win it. Carolina, 10-1. Maple Leafs, 10-1. Florida, 11. Tampa Bay, 12. I'm going Edmonton, 12-1. I know this is like a super sexy pick. You know, they got McDavid. They got Draisaitl. They might have been the second best in the league last year, right? Like you might be like, oh, well, their style isn't conducive to playoff hockey. I feel like they've proven that they were, except for the loss to the Avalanche. I know there's a bunch of shootout games, but Evander Kane's back. They're looking better at goaltending. It's Jack Campbell and the local kid, Stuart Skinner, in goal. I think this is as solid as they've been for years in net. 12-1, check. What do you like for hockey?
It may be the yin and yang of sports. I never realized it is like we can't have both the NHL and the NFL thriving via offense. And so maybe the rise of goal scoring in the NHL is why. I don't know if that's the point, but yes, you say Edmonton is not their brand is not conducive to springtime hockey. And as you also said, they disproved that. What, 3-4 months ago? I can't believe that they're starting the season already. Didn't it just happen like 5 weeks ago that the Stanley Cup was won there? Your pick is smart because the Campbell, nay, Western Conference is way lighter than what's going on over in the East. Nevertheless, there's no way you're getting me to do anything other than, yes, it's a homer pick, but it is a sound pick. I am taking the Pittsburgh Penguins to survive the rugged East. No, the Wales Conference, where they will face the Colorado Avalanche. They know how to win now. They know how to put it together. Win some rugged series. That's going to be your Stanley Cup final, and Spaghetti will say, oh, he's a homer. He's such a homer. And perhaps I am. But let me tell you this. This jive about this, what used to be true, the old rules, one rule that is off now is like, oh, well, once you're in your 30s, once your core's in its 30s, your team is dead in the water. That was in the 20th century. That's not true anymore.
No.
Fitness is different now. Tom Brady's a 45-year-old man.
Not only is this a homer pick, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you a nice prop here. I'm not giving you props, a separate prop.
I'm just going to clap until you stop talking.
Pens to not make the playoffs. Spaghetti bet this. Pens to not make the playoffs. 3-1 odds. Letang, Malkin, Raquel, fine. Why don't you just have an old timers day? Have them together. That's the way. You think Jason Zucker's healthy? He's not. They're getting bounced. They're not even going to make the playoffs. 3-1 odds.
Blue line strong. We're ready to roll, pal. Not, see you soon, Rags.
Martin,
I'm about to say, I know that at least half of those guys are old because Sal mentioned, and I knew their names, and I haven't paid any attention to hockey since I left Detroit. And that was at least 6 years ago.
He's kidding himself, Martin, if he thinks they're going to put it together. No way. So, Penguins are done. Yeah.
When I read this rundown and I saw that I was going to be required to give a Stanley Cup pick, mm-hmm. I texted my resident hockey expert who texted me back and said, Oilers or Flames at 15-1 ooh, are my best bets. So I'm going to go ahead and pick the Flames.
Interesting. Okay.
I'd rather root for fire than oil. So no, it's real scientific back here. But no, I'm going with the Oilers or the Flames at 15-1. And I actually will put these bets in because I said last year I was going to I took all his bets and I followed him throughout the season. About midway through, I lost track, but was surprised when I won some money at the end of the year. So we'll see what happens this year.
Mikey Meatballs knows what he's talking about. Spaghetti, real quick, about what Shaq's saying, the Pens. My God. Well, at least
Wait. Is Spaghetti going to pick? Who's the Spaghetti going to pick?
I'm not going to pick my team, even though they are very, very good. I don't like Canes. To put that bad juju on them. I'll just go with the Leafs. I picked the Leafs last year. I think, you know, maybe the Murray Samsonov thing could work at goaltending. Obviously, they moved on from Jack Campbell. Their core is still really good. Maybe a slight bit top heavy on offense, but I like their entire team. They're going to be right there in the mix. But that being said, my Rangers are a very, very complete team that should only improve as the young guys get better and better. I think Czech picked the Penguins more for the shock reaction and just to be funny and whatever, because if he's actually being serious, that is the single worst gambling pick or advice ever given out of any podcast in Extra Points history.
Now I'm gonna clap.
It is really that bad. They're not gonna I Islanders fans, Devils fans, Columbus Blue Jackets fans, Kings fans, just random people just to get their like nobody thinks the Penguins are going to be good, let alone make the playoffs. So like, I don't, you guys.
Wow, 3-1. Let's jump on it, Spaghetti.
Wait a second. You talk to Kings fans about this? I have to back off if you talk to Kings fans about it.
I'm just saying, it's not just angry Rangers fans. I've talked to people who are fans of all different teams, Eastern Conference, Western Conference, does not matter. You guys are running it back with a team that limped into the playoffs. You could mark Malkin to miss half a season. Like you say you're good on the blue line. Like there's no huge prospects that are great that is going to lift this old team. Like you didn't make any key additions in free agency. And the problem is this: if the other
Jeff Petrie's a nice upgrade,
if the other Eastern Conference teams did not
on the blue line,
if the other Eastern Conference teams did not improve. then I would say maybe you have a shot to get it back in. Everyone else in the East improved. Like, teams that didn't miss the playoffs last year got a lot better, and you guys did not improve. I just don't see how you're going to
out. Check that. It's interesting. There's always a big-name team. Look at the Islanders last year. Everyone thought, oh, they're good for the next 7 years to make the – but there's always a team that gets bounced early or doesn't
I like the teams that come – not come out of nowhere, but the teams on the rise. I like the Wings. I like the Kings. I haven't talked to any LA Kings fans about how they feel about it, but I like those teams to kind of rise up a little bit. I think the Canes are interesting. Matt Murray, you know, hail him and Samsonov. I don't know that gets it done there. Florida's a classic regular season team. You know, I think I'd love to see the Leafs do it for the sport and for the nature, for their style.
Yeah, they had their chance.
Listen, these Penguins, I you know, 3 years from now, you know, the goose will be cooked. They got one more run in them.
You know,
we got a run in them. I know.
We got to wrap up. But Mikey Meatballs, how far do the Penguins go real quick?
Well, if you asked me a month ago, I would have said they're terrible. But I looked at their roster the other day. I actually think they're a decent team.
Whoa.
I'm siding with Dave.
That's not fun. That's not fun, Meatballs. Come on.
So I'm team Dave on this. One team I would say that is fake good in that conference is the Hurricanes. So
I kind of agree. Yes.
Them not to make the playoffs, I think, is around 4-1. They probably make it, but if you're going to take a team to out of that bunch, I think it's the Hurricanes.
Interesting. All right. Well, see, now we know, Martin. All right, we're going to put some money down on this just to make it interesting. There you go. Against all odds, guys, we're going to come up later today. We're going to have props, and we're going to have Hart Trophy winners and cup and all that stuff. -3, Sheck, you're on with Hench. Tomorrow, you already got an episode in the books, right?
Yep, with Tyler Dunn. Good times there. Mr. Lister, an hour early tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern.
Oh,
tune
it is.
In
okay,
there,
good.
Sports trivia, yes.
6 p.m., Mr. Lister, Spotify Live. Martin, Lemon Pepper Parlay, always fun with Will Blackman.
Yeah, you know, we'll break down who are our favorites for the President's Trophy, the Conn Smythe, the you know, the Calder.
What? Really? You're doing all that?
I doubt it. We're going to talk about the roots right here, concussion ball, football.
Yeah, waiver wired, Eddie Spaghetti, Jen Piacenti. We got Megan Fun of Sports. We have Covered in Glory. So much out there. Do it all on the Extra Points podcast network, extrapoints.com/arcade. You can join our various contests, and that'll do it for another episode of Extra Points. A reminder to everyone out there, you may feel like underdogs, but please remember, you're all my favorites.